Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for August 27th, 2018. This is David Corey along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thank you for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey, David. Good evening, and good evening, everyone. Tonight, we have a few topics to discuss. But first, I'd like to remind everyone listening to the show that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, comments, and questions. So you can call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. I'd like to remind everybody listening that the Veterans News Hour is the show for veterans. We want to hear from you and your families about whatever issues you may have with the VA. What has been your experience? Sharing your experience will only help other veterans. Before we get to some hot topics regarding VA news out of D.C., I do want to take this opportunity to join with the millions of people around the country and overseas to wish the family of Senator John McCain well with the loss of the senator. McCain not only served our country, but he endured some of the most unspeakable torture that anyone could have and did so for his country. After he was shot down in October of 1967, suffering serious injuries and captured by the North Vietnamese. He was released in 1973 and refused an out-of-sequence early reparation offer. He put country before self. The list people could do that is pretty short. And the fact that decades later he was monumental in the movement to strike peace with the people who tortured him and were his captors is a testament to the greatness of the man and rising to the occasion. Former President Bill Clinton, who signed the peace initiative regarding North Vietnam, said, "I could not have done so without bipartisan support, support from Vietnam veterans, and specifically Senator John McCain, who was instrumental in helping me get this done." Senator McCain also used his position to help and support veterans. As a veteran himself, Senator McCain had a long battle with the bureaucracy at the Department of Veteran Affairs to reduce wait time and improve the care provided to our nation's veterans. Because of his status as a well-known veteran in Congress, Senator McCain was often contacted by veterans in need of assistance from across the country, not just in Arizona. Over his career, Senator McCain has successfully advanced numerous pieces of legislation to help veterans, including some recent legislation. In 2014, Senator McCain led a bipartisan effort to address the scandal and delayed and denied care at the Phoenix VA health care system. He led a bipartisan effort with Senator Bernie Sanders to write and pass, which passed 93-3 Senate vote, the Veterans Access to Care Through Choice, Accountability, and Transparency Act of 2014. This legislation made some significant reforms to the VA. The bill addressed the cultural mismanagement and neglect at the VA, providing veterans more choice and flexibility in their health care, and introduced reforms that made it easier to hold all those responsible for the Phoenix scandal in care accountability. A hallmark of the bill was the choice card, which Senator McCain first proposed when he ran for president in 2008, which addresses veterans' wait times for appointments at VA facilities, and which received praise from veteran advocacy organizations such as Concerned Veterans for America. The bill also included $10 billion in emergency spending to let vets who could not get VA appointments within 30 days of request or who live more than 40 miles from healthcare facilities seek treatment from private providers. It increased the capacity of the VA healthcare system by pumping $5 billion into hiring new doctors, nurses, and other VA staff. Also, $1.27 billion was spent on leases for 27 new medical centers in 18 states and Puerto Rico. Senator McCain also addressed veteran suicide prevention, and he was the co-sponsor of the Clay Hunt Suicide Prevention for American Veterans Act. The legislation passed unanimously by the Senate and signed into law by President Obama in February 2015. This legislation reformed and strengthened veteran suicide prevention programs at the Department of Defense and the VA. He sponsored an amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act for 2016 that ensured that no American family ever had to pay out of pocket to witness the dignified transfer of a loved one's remains. The amendment was inspired by Marine Lance Corporal Jacob Hugg from Phoenix, Arizona, who was killed while on a humanitarian relief mission following the devastating earthquake in Nepal. While McCain had his critics, which is the nature of politics, he was willing to admit his faults and mistakes, and he would try to learn from them. Senator McCain believed his office required the public trust, and therefore duty to country was paramount in his life. I recall this past year when Senator McCain, while speaking on the Senate floor, urged his fellow senators to get back to the work of the people and take care of business. Senator McCain will be missed, and it will be interesting in Arizona as this year it will send two new senators to D.C. Senator McCain's final words before he passed were, "I lived and died a proud American." David, before we turn to a hot topic regarding the Blue Water Navy bill, what thoughts would you like to share regarding Senator McCain?
Well, thank you for that tribute to Senator McCain. Richard, one thing that I remember Senator McCain for was the fact that he was a leading opponent to the use of torture and waterboarding and other practices that that many people felt really amounted to torture, despite other labels being put on them. He was a vocal opponent, and you could certainly understand that based on his own experience 5.5 years as a POW, in which he was tortured, as were hundreds of other POWs. So that's one lasting impression that I have from his career. The other one, though, is that while you said earlier he had his critics at the nature of politics, one thing that I think really goes beyond politics was he was probably the most outspoken hawk in the U.S. Senate as far as being a proponent of the use of military force, the expansion of U.S. military reach around the globe, and promoting extremely aggressive military posture, and seeming, in my opinion, to always view conflicts with other countries through the lens of militarism. That's my view. That's a view shared by many people if they assess his career. I think that was really a lasting impact of his career since we've been at war for the last 17 years. So, rest in peace. Go ahead.
On that note regarding McCain, I know when we got into Iraq, one of the things he said,
I can barely hear you, Rick, if you can speak up.
Yeah. One of the things that he had said regarding Iraq, when we entered Iraq, is, we need to go there and finish it. And that, I think, came from his experience with the Vietnam War, where, he's on record as saying, the government lied to the Americans, telling Americans that we were going to be in Vietnam and we were doing well, when in fact we were not doing well, we were losing, and that we had not really put the emphasis on going in there and finishing the job, and we just kind of walked away. And that was one thing that stuck in his craw, and he criticized.
I think the threshold question, though, is whether we should have been in there in the first place. And
but once you're there, either get out or finish the job, and we got out with our legs between our a tail between our legs, and we didn't finish the job. And I think that's kind of what McCain was was alluding to in future conflicts. When we got into Iraq, let's go in and finish the job. And we're still not finishing the job. We're still just toying around.
Well, we could spend hours debating on what finishing the job means and whether we should have even been in the war in the first place. He was a huge proponent of invading Iraq in the first place, and a huge proponent of using military force. And by using military force, I don't simply mean in combat, but I mean the use of military power through the military presence around the globe, which has a certain threatening approach towards one's opponents internationally. So in any event, I don't mean to disparage him, certainly. As they say, don't speak ill of the dead, but I think when you're assessing his legacy, one cannot overlook the fact that he was one of the most hawkish, if not the most hawkish, person in the U.S. Senate, probably second only, or, you know, along with his buddy Lindsey Graham from South Carolina. But that's a legacy that the country is still dealing with and will deal with long after, you know, now. And so, in any event,
what I found interesting that I didn't realize this until today was that McCain had taken the seat from Barry Goldwater after Goldwater retired. So that one seat has had talk about a legacy. And Goldwater and McCain.
Yeah, speaking of Goldwater, I mean, he would talk about another hawk.
Yeah.
I think he wanted to use nukes in South Asia.
My parents and grandfather loved Goldwater. And we were from Jersey. I mean, my parents, you know, New Jersey, which is, you know, Irish Catholic Democrats, but they were big Republicans. And they loved Goldwater. That's all I ever heard as a kid growing up. Go Barry.
Yeah, I'm reminded. I know this isn't a political show, but when you mention Goldwater, I'm reminded of the campaign slogan when he ran for president in 1964. His supporters said, you know, his slogan was, "In your heart, you know he's right." So his opponent said, "In your gut, you know he's nuts." In any event, let's get back
David,
to
David, tell us about the Blue Water Navy bill.
Yeah, why don't we do that? And actually, I can segue from John McCain to this issue pretty easily. I'm on the email newsletter list of quite a few veteran organizations. That's the nature of what I do, trying to keep up with all the news. And I'm on the VA's news feed, get multiple emails from the VA every single day. But one email I got today was from the Vietnam Veterans of America, and they're wasting absolutely no time trying to make some hay from Senator McCain's passing, and it's on the topic that you just mentioned, Richard, which was the legislation before Congress now on the so-called Blue Water veterans served in Vietnam who are seeking compensation for diseases which they say were due to exposure to Agent Orange. So the Vietnam Veterans of America sent out this email blast today saying that this bill, which is now stuck in the Senate, it passed the House overwhelmingly, 382-0, back in June, but now it's stuck in the Senate. And so Vietnam Veterans of America want to get some steam behind, to get the wind behind this bill now by renaming it after John McCain, hoping that that somehow will make the difference. But the rest of the story on this bill was it passed overwhelmingly in the House. It got to the Senate, though, and it went to the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, which had a hearing earlier in the month. Excuse me. And the VA testified at the hearing. The Undersecretary for Benefits, Paul Lawrence, testified really with a blistering attack on the bill, said that the VA really thinks it's a bad idea. Why? Because Undersecretary Lawrence testified that in the VA's view, there's no credible scientific evidence to support extending Agent Orange-related benefits to shipboard personnel who never were ashore in Vietnam or patrol within its inland waters. Basically, the bill talks about the so-called blue water veterans who served in ships off miles off the coast of Vietnam. And the purpose of the bill was to make it easier for those veterans to get disability compensation under this presumption. So the VA is strongly opposing it. Who knows what the Senate's going to do with it now. I like to point out, for those that may be following this issue, we had on our show a couple times in 2017 retired Navy Commander John Wells, who is the executive director of a group based in Louisiana called Military Veterans Advocacy. You can go back and listen, in case you're interested, to John Wells' interview on our shows on November 20th of 2017 and May the 29th of 2017. We have the archive podcast on our website, which is bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour. And look for those two recorded shows, November 20th, 2017, and May the 29th, 2017. John Wells is a huge advocate, probably one of the leading advocate among veteran groups. I'm not aware of any single person that has put so much time and energy and his own resources into pushing this legislation. Although he's based in Louisiana, he's frequently in Washington, D.C., meeting with VA officials, members of Congress, both the House and the Senate, and their staff. So John Wells is an expert on the side of proposing and supporting this legislation. So our listeners interested may want to go back and listen to his interviews, and also go to his websites. Again, his organization is Military Veterans Advocacy, and they're both on the Internet, and they have their Facebook page. So, we'll see where this goes. As I say, Undersecretary for Benefits Lawrence, he is just a blistering attack on the bill. He has warned the Senate that if H.R. 299 is passed, then it's going to be cited when any other exposure, toxic exposure issues are presented to Congress, and it will be putting more pressure on Congress to accommodate those requests. And we know, because we've talked about these on prior shows, issues like the burn pit legislation, Camp Lejeune, and also water contamination at other installations around the country. So Undersecretary Lawrence said, and I quote, "The VA is opposed to paying for provisions of this bill by increasing the cost that some veterans must pay to access their home loan benefits," which was one proposal on how to pay for this legislation. He also said that veterans will either have to either pay the VA funding fee with interest or pay up front with cash. This means fewer veterans will buy homes or will buy homes using the non-VA option, potentially opening them to predatory lenders. So Secretary Lawrence was opposing the bill, not just because the VA is taking the position that the science doesn't support extending the presumption, but also because the legislation is drafted in a way that that they're going to pay for the legislation by raising user fees on VA guaranteed home loans. It's controversial. We'll have to see what happens. What are your thoughts on it, Richard?
Well, you know, the two issues that Lawrence addresses is the scientific one and the finance one. And quite frankly, the only thing, one I think is really the issue for Lawrence as well as the government, is the finance one. Because if you look back at the Agent Orange legislation, the Camp Lejeune legislation, you can't say that those legislations passing those presumptive conditions were based entirely on scientific evidence. We've discussed that over the last year and a half on our show.
About, well, the argument, you know, though, is if I could
well,
interrupt.
Let me get, you know, if you go back to, you know, the Agent Orange, for instance, you know, one of the things they throw out is that prostate cancer is covered under Agent Orange. And we all know that the average male is, whether you serve in Vietnam or not, you can possibly end up with prostate cancer. Yet, you know, you go to Vietnam and you get prostate cancer and you're automatically covered. So I'm not buying the scientific side of it. It's all about the money. It's always been about the money. You and I are in the trenches with the VA when it comes to compensation claims, and it's all about the money. Deny our veterans compensation because we don't want to pay the money, and that's all that's going on here as far as I'm concerned. The government doesn't want to pay the money.
I'll have to say that I agree with what you said about the some of the Agent Orange presumptives, because some of those I think are somewhat questionable. But the VA did take a position that it was based on science, whether one thinks it is or not.
Well, you can take the position, but, you know, anybody can take the position. But when you really come back down to it, I mean, you got to say it's the money.
What I'm saying is that the VA was willing to say there was enough science to support the issues that are on the VA Agent Orange list for presumptive disability compensation, and that list has changed over the years. They added things later that weren't originally on the list, and that was due to a lot of veteran group pressure and citing studies. But the VA has finally, and even if you felt that, and it sounds like the position you were describing is that you didn't think the science there supported the prostate cancer connection for Agent Orange. Well, if you felt that if someone believes that that's not a legitimate connection, then the argument against extending it even further is two wrongs don't make a right. Just because they were wrong for people that had boots on the ground doesn't mean they now have to extend it to everyone that served, you know, 100 miles offshore in an aircraft carrier. So at some point, in other words, they have to draw the line and say, even if they were too generous here, that doesn't commit them to continuing to be overly generous. In fact, that's basically the argument that the undersecretary said, which was that if they do pass this legislation, which they believe is not based on science, and if they just, in other words, if they just pass it for political reasons, then now they've set a precedent that it's going to open the floodgates on every other allegation of toxic exposure anywhere to anything. So I certainly understand the VA's view. I agree with you as far as it shouldn't be about money, but I take a different view on the scientific sense. I think the VA does have an obligation to make sure the science is there before they do that.
One of the things that we ran into, David, and this was one of our clients, is the TDY situations when one of those sailors is on one of the ships and they're out in the blue water, and all of a sudden they are sent to the mainland of Vietnam to do some work, and they're there for 3 or 4 days, and this happened obviously in one of our cases, and the VA denied this veteran service connection for a long time until we handled the case and won the case, saying that there was no evidence to support that he did in fact have boots on the ground. Now he was in blue water, you know, and this was a situation where he wouldn't have had to worry about trying to prove whether or not he was actually had boots on the ground in Vietnam. So, you know, there's one situation that this legislation would have helped that veteran years ago when he first started his claims.
I think the VA also learned a lesson from its, and this is, I'll use the term very generous. That's my opinion. Very generous Agent Orange rules. Because under the Agent Orange presumptive list, if a service member just spent one day in Vietnam and then later contracted any one of the long list of diseases, then the VA will presume that that was due to Agent Orange exposure, even just one day. Now, fast forward several decades to the issue that we've talked a lot about on prior shows, which is the issue of contaminated drinking water at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. Well, the VA has established a much tougher rule, which is for someone to claim disability compensation based on a presumption that they were exposed to the contaminated drinking water, they had to have served at Camp Lejeune for at least 30 days. So they've drawn the line there. In the VA's view, based on science, that in other words, that you had to have enough exposure, really, for it really to have that harmful effect to your health. So
right.
We'll see. We'll see. Quite frankly, I'll be surprised if they pass this Blue Water Navy legislation.
Yeah, and we had Jerry Ensminger on the show a couple of times and about the Camp Lejeune. And one of the discussions we had was about the legislation and how it sat in the desk of the congressman from the panhandle of Florida for a long time before they finally pulled it out of his desk drawer. And the negotiations that went on, Jerry said that, you know, some of the stuff that's on there basically got tossed in because some congressman wanted that added to the list. Clearly, there wasn't any scientific analysis there. That was just one politician saying, I want this added to the list. So, yes, they only approved 8, and that's a good start, I guess. But, I'm still not sold on this quote-unquote, this stuff will be passed, provided that the science is there, which, you know, let's fast forward even more to the burn pits, you know, and the issues there. I mean, you know, God forbid those veterans who have suffered from the burn pits end up suffering, you know, even more and not getting the legislation necessary for them to be compensated. And it's going to be interesting to see how that kind of plays out in Congress and when that all starts amping up. I agree with you. I doubt this Blue Water Navy bill is going to pass.
It's got to be based on science. If it's not based on science, then it's based on the thing that you were just criticizing, which is politics. And that's not a standard in my opinion, ought to be followed. That it's just politics that decided. Politics decided the list of 15 that were covered in the Janie Ensminger Act for health care coverage. But when the VA did their further studies, you know, 5 years later when they enacted regulations on the disability benefits issue, the regulations were based on purportedly scientific studies, and they knocked off some of the disabilities which were on the much longer list, and they only came down to 8. So I think the VA is trying to with the Camp Lejeune and the regulations to get the politics out and base it on science, which I think they need to do that. Anyway, we'll see what happens. If any of our listeners have any views they'd like to share, please call in. We'd love to hear from you. Our toll-free call-in number nationwide is 1-888-627-6008. Again, if you want to speak with us here on the Veterans News Hour tonight, toll-free call-in number 1-888-627-6008. So whether you want to talk about the Blue Water Navy Agent Orange issue or any other issues, we'd love to hear your opinion. Rich, before we move on to some other topics, anything else?
Yeah, I was just, as you were talking there, I was thinking about some of the BVA, the Board of Veteran Appeals decisions that we've had with some of our clients who were not able to get the presumptive service connection. But then the Board of Veteran Appeals came back, and the judge said, well, while we can't necessarily put it under the presumption, and this is the Agent Orange presumption, actually, it's clear that the veteran, while serving, was exposed to hazardous chemicals. And based on that, the board has turned around and granted the service connection. So, that's another point of view, another way of looking at it. They got it from somewhere. And by the time we do all the research and do all the science, half of these guys and gals are going to be dead. And that's the other argument. We're going to spend all this time doing research and science and everything else, and at the end of the day, half of these people are going to end up being dead. So, the bottom line is it's a very, very tough situation that our veterans are in. And we just hope that we can, get the legislation that gets them the coverage and ultimately the compensation that they need.
Yeah.
So, David, speaking of burn pits, why don't you tell us about Greg Levitt's documentary?
Yeah, last year we had on our show film director and producer Greg Levitt, who produced a documentary film called Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, How America Poisons Its Soldiers. It's on the harmful effects of exposure to open burn pits, which were commonly used in Iraq and Afghanistan, and which are suspected by many veterans and veteran groups of causing large numbers of veterans, over 100,000 or more, to suffer very serious health problems because there were many toxic substances which were incinerated in those open burn pits, some of which were many acres in size. They burned 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and about every type of garbage and toxic substance that could be generated on a military installation was set afire with fuel and then just burn. And if you see the film, you'll see that at least at the largest installations, the smoke, fog, and haze created by those constant fires really hugged the ground pretty close and would have exposed a lot of people in the surrounding vicinity. If you haven't seen the film but you're interested, you check out the film's website, which is burnpitsdocumentary.com. That's burnpitsdocumentary.com. You can also go to Facebook, and in the Facebook search engine, type in Burn Pits Documentary. That will then take you to a link to the Facebook page. You can purchase the DVD. And even better, you can host a showing of the film in your hometown at your local theater. Go to the website tugg.com. That's T-U-G-G.com. And on the search engine on tug.com, look for the film Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, and you can sponsor a showing. It's crowdfunded. In other words, they've got to sell the tickets before the theater will agree to show the film. But that's one way that you can help support the publicity of this film. You can maybe work with some local veteran groups in your area to sell tickets and help publicize the film. It's very important. It's a very well-made film. A lot of great experts and veterans that appear in the film talking about their experience. So I strongly recommend you check that out. And by the way, Richard and I are going to be meeting with film producer Greg Levitt this weekend. We're working on another project with him, which is a film project on the broader subject of the costs of war and peace building, ways to overcome the mindset of militarism, which is something our country now has been under for quite a long time. And we're working on this film project, kind of a paradigm shifting idea. And there's a lot of work going into this film. And we want it to be really a first-class production. So stay tuned. If anyone in our listening audience is interested in supporting us in any way, and that includes financially, because making films are expensive endeavors, please contact Richard Hurley or myself. Go through our website for the show, which is bbsradio.com/theveteransnewshour. Our contact information, phone numbers, and emails are there. So we'll have more on that in upcoming weeks. We view it as a very important project and a natural follow-up to the work we've been doing for years to help veterans and their families. We see the effects of war in the lives of individuals, and we can see from there the effect on communities as well. And we're lining up a number of national experts who study these issues, and hopefully will share their insights. So that'll be this weekend that we're working with Greg Lovett, and we're looking forward to it. So, Richard, over to you.
Yeah, on that. Well, first, I just want to briefly on the documentary by Greg Lovett, Burn Pits. I want to reiterate David's stress and importance of this film. You know, we just got finished talking about Agent Orange and Camp Lejeune. Well, for these young vets serving in Iraq and Afghanistan, Burn Pits, that's their Agent Orange and Camp Lejeune. And unfortunately, right now, there is no legislation being put forth that will hopefully get them compensated for the injuries that they've sustained, especially the respiratory injuries that they've sustained and the post-traumatic stress conditions that they've sustained as a result of being exposed to this awful, awful, toxic situation with these burn pits. So, pay attention, everyone that's listening, pay attention to this and, see what you can do. Talk to your congresspeople. Bring it up to them. Talk about the burn pits. And I'm sure they'll do a double take and go, oh, you know about them, huh? Well, yeah, I do know about them. So that's very important. And, yes, the project that David and I are working on, the Cost of War Project, is a very important project and one that David and I are really focusing on. It's a heartfelt project that we're working on. It's going to take a lot of time. It's going to continue to take a lot of time. But it's very important. And one of the things that a little pet peeve for me is, you know, we talk about the infrastructure in this country and how bad it is. Even Trump mentioned during his campaign run and since he's been president how bad our infrastructure is in this country. Well, the military budget in this country is second. I mean, it's the largest. No one spends as much money on the military as we do. And one of the things that I've been focusing on is the fact that if we took half of that money, we'd still have a tremendous military. And if we took half that money and put it into our infrastructure, into a rail system, into our airports. I'm on my way back from vacation, and I stopped in O'Hara in Chicago. It's a dump. I'm sorry to tell you that, Chicago, but O'Hara Airport is a dump, and there's no reason for it. And the amount of traffic that goes in and out of that that airport, clearly, you know, that represents the negative side of our infrastructure. That's one aspect of what David and I are working on. I think it's a very important aspect, not to bring up a bad word, but, you know, I recently have been going online and checking on China and the infrastructure there. And their military budget, by the way, is a third of what ours is. And their infrastructure is unbelievable. They just finished a bridge. I believe the bridge is 25 to 30 miles long, connecting mainland China to Hong Kong. The other bridges over these gorges are as long, if not longer, than the Verrazano Bridge and the Golden Gate Bridge. They're building up their infrastructure. We need to do the same thing, and we can do that by maybe taking less money in our military and dumping it into our infrastructure. So that's just, again, one aspect of what David and I are working on. And as David said, we are trying to create a paradigm here that basically we have to start looking at and going forward for our children and especially our grandchildren how we're going to handle conflict around the world. So that's just looking forward to the project, David.
Well, I think it's a project that is long overdue. There are a lot of films out there that I've seen and heard of, but none that does exactly what this film hopefully will accomplish, which is to talk about not just the cost of war, but it takes it to the next logical step, which is, all right, how can you do a better job of preventing wars in the first place? And if wars break out, to bring them to a resolution and restore peace as soon as possible, rather than have these wars drag on and become perpetual wars like we have right now, and perpetual wars that also happen to be self-perpetuating. In other words, they keep creating more enemies, in a sense, because of the way they're conducted. And there are people, there are many experts who study these issues as their professional area of expertise, and we hope to have them participate and to appear in this documentary. So we'll see. We'll keep our audience posted. But again, if anyone was interested in supporting this cause, please contact us again, bbsradio.com/TheVeteransNewsHour. We've got about 15 minutes left in tonight's show. We'd welcome hearing from anyone out there in the listening audience. Again, our toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. So, Richard, I understand you have some news.
I sure do.
More news from the VA and the health issues.
In other news, on July 19th, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs and IBM Watson Health announced the extension of a public-private partnership to apply artificial intelligence, AI, to help interpret cancer data in the treatment of veteran patients. First announced 2 years ago as part of the National Cancer Moonshot Initiative, VA oncologists have now used IBM Watson for genomics technology to support precision oncology for care for more than 2,700 veterans with cancer. Precision oncology is the practice of biologically directed cancer care. For example, the mutations in a cancer's DNA can significantly impact the treatment options available to treat that cancer and the likely outcomes after treatment. By knowing the cancer's DNA, oncologists and patients are able to choose therapies that specifically target the patient's cancer. The VA's precision oncology program primarily supports stage 4 cancer patients who have exhausted other treatment options. The partnership extension with IBM will enable VA oncologists to continue using Watson for genomics through at least June 2019. Our mission with the VA Precision Oncology Program is to bring the most advanced treatment opportunities to veterans in hopes of giving our nation's heroes better treatment through these breakthroughs, said Acting Secretary Peter O'Rourke. We look forward to continuing this strategic partnership to assist VA in providing the best care for our veterans. VA treats 3.5% of the nation's cancer patients, the largest group of cancer patients within any one health care group. In order to bring precision oncology advances to this group of patients with equal access available anywhere in the country, the VA established a central hub in Durham, North Carolina. In this facility, a small group of oncologists and pathologists received tumor samples from patients nationwide and sequenced the tumor DNA. They then used AI, the ability of a computer program or a machine to link to think and learn, to help interpret the genomic data and identifying relevant mutations and potential therapeutic options that target those mutations. More than one-third of the patients who have benefited from VA's precision oncology program are veterans from rural areas where it has traditionally been difficult to deliver cutting-edge medical breakthroughs. VA is leading the nation to scale and spread the delivery of high-quality precision oncology care, one veteran at a time, said Dr. Kai-Yu Ri, Chief Health Officer for IBM Watson Health. It is incredibly challenged to read, understand, and stay up to date with the breadth and depth of the medical literature and to link them to relevant mutations for personalized cancer treatment. This is where AI can play an important role in helping scale precision oncology, as demonstrated in our work with the VA, the largest integrated health system in the U.S. David, this is, I think, a great example of the private and the public sector working together to try to solve a problem. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely, and I really have to applaud the VA for this effort. And it reminds me of last year when we had film director Rick Burns on the show to talk about his documentary on the human cost of war, and he talked a lot about the VA healthcare system, and he traced back the history. If you notice that most VA medical centers, hospitals, were originally, and this is certainly true for most of the older ones, they were located very close to university medical centers and research centers. So there was that very close link from the very beginning of the VA healthcare system, at least the modern VA healthcare system, where there was that partnership between the government-run VA healthcare system and then the university system, research hospitals and medical schools. So it's this is kind of a continuation of that with the private system and working with the latest technology. So that's real interesting stuff. So, as I say, I think the VA really deserves a lot of credit for that. The VA has also done a lot of work in the area of spinal injuries and traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress. They've been forced to because, the country's been at war for the last 17 years, and veterans of two wars are coming home, and the signature injuries have been traumatic brain injury, spinal injuries, amputations from these IEDs, and also post-traumatic stress. So the VA's had to devote a lot of resources and, working on cutting-edge care and treatment. So another continuation.
David, I admittedly, I give the VA a hard time when it comes to a lot of the stuff that they do or don't do for our veterans, and I focus most of the time on the compensation side, because we're in the trenches trying to get these veteran service connected for their injuries and reasonable, fair and reasonable compensation so that they can help them financially through the rest of their life. But on the medical side, I got to tell you, I ask a lot of our veterans all the time, what do they think of the medical services that they're getting? And by and large, I just hear great, really good things about what they're doing on the medical side, and specifically in the clinics around, especially the clinics in Florida. A lot of the veterans that I represent, they talk about how wonderful the clinics are, taking care of them and meeting their needs, and the doctors are great, the nurses are great. So, they are making, I think they're doing a good job. Everybody can do better, but they're doing a good job, and it appears that they are serving the needs of our veterans. So, I have to step back and give them kudos where they deserve the kudos. But this initiative with the cancer treatment program that we just talked about with IBM is another step in the right direction.
Yep. Well, I'd agree with you there. They've done a lot of good things, and I've heard a lot of favorable things myself from veterans. Florida has the third largest veteran population behind Texas and California, and the VA has put a lot of resources in their healthcare system throughout the state of Florida, quite a few clinics to make healthcare access reasonably available there for veterans throughout the state. We know many veterans live in the rural areas, and yet there are a lot of clinics reasonably close to them. So,
David, you have more experience than I have when it comes to the Haley PA Center down there.
I can barely hear you, Richard.
You've had more experience than I have with the Haley Institute down there in Tampa. I want you to quickly tell us about, you know, what a wonderful job they're doing down there with our spinal cord.
Like I say, the James Haley Hospital in Tampa is a pretty impressive facility, and they've done a lot. You know, they've got a spinal cord department there, which is well known, and so veterans speak pretty highly of it. Again, that's not to say that there may not be occasional criticisms, perhaps justified, but VA has done a lot, and it deserves a lot of credit. So looks like we're getting close to the end of our hour tonight, Richard. And one area that we regularly mention on our show is the Coaching into Care program, another very important VA program. So if you would share with us what that is about.
Yeah, the Coaching into Care program, it helps the veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. You know, give the program a call. The toll-free number there is 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, the VA's Coaching into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I would like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. You know, as David said, these are two vital programs that the VA offers can be extremely helpful to our veterans. And, you know, we've had different people on the show talking about the tough adjustment coming back from military life to civilian life, whether it's a physical injury or post-traumatic stress. So these programs, you know, we mention them all the time when we give out the phone number, and I really hope people write the number down because you never know when you can pass that number along to a veteran, even if it's not a family member. You know, you might see a veteran who's homeless. You know, that number, again, is 1-888-823-7458. That's the Coaching and the Care number. And the crisis line, which obviously is just as important, and that number is 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Keep those numbers handy because even if it's not a family member that you can help, you certainly can help someone who's homeless. We see them all the time, whether in our cities, in the rural communities. So keep those numbers handy. Back to you, David.
No, that's great advice because people may not know really how to help, but they want to help, and a good starting point is to steer the veteran or family member to the professionals. And the Coaching into Care program is a great program, as well as the crisis line. So that's why we make a point of emphasizing it, and we hope that our listeners will share that, at least make a note of it. So we're about out of time for tonight. I'd like to thank Richard for all his hard work and preparation for our show, and I'd like to thank all of you listeners. And we hope you'll join us next week for another edition of Veterans News Hour. We'd like to thank our new sponsors, Joyce and Joe Chevroli, as well as Corey and Hurley Law Group. We'd like to thank our producer of BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. And we hope you'll tune in next week, same time, same station, another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, we hope you have a great week.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.